This is Brock and Salk.
You want to go to the Seahawks game? All right, give me one more screen.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
I would put very little stock in what Brock Beard has to say.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app.
Salk, the third time in 2 days, is flat out wrong.
And 710sports.com.
Well, good morning, everybody. It is Brock and Salk here on 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com as well. Brock is in Arizona, but with us, which is great. Good morning.
Well, good morning, buddy. Sweetie. How are you?
I'm fantastic. How are you doing?
You know, I just love being separated from you. I mean, I love being there with you, but I just love, you know, I love this every once in a while, just being separated, yet, you know, not far, and just feel that, and I can just feel the presence of someone back. I can just feel her smile, listening to some of her show, you know, getting ready for hours. Just, you know, the family's complete, even if we are a little.
Well, separate. We're not, though, because Howdy is somewhere on a plane circling.
Howdy is
circling
in great
southwestern
spirits.
United States.
When Howdy we're on the same travels, continent, though.
Hi, Liz.
Hi, Brock.
When Howdy travels with me, the joy that just emanates, pure and utter joy that emanates from that man.
Right.
Especially when we eat, you know, we go to meals and just have just a blast.
You mean,
we had
you
just
mean
a
when
wonderful
you buy him
time.
Free food.
Yeah, he just loved it.
Especially
right.
when we eat.
Right.
He's super excited.
Okay. When he doesn't have to pay for food, he's super happy.
When we break bread together, he is one happy camper.
I bet he is. So,
yes. Yeah, that's... Not quite as happy as Pete yesterday, but pretty close. Pretty darn close. Pete was, you know, just listening back to some of that sound song, Pete was pretty excited about what they got done, as he should be, over the weekend in London.
Well, I mean, it was a pretty darn good game. They blew the doors off of a team, and sort of all of a sudden you start talking to people around the city today. And, you know, I was out yesterday and talking to friends and people, and they're, yeah, all right, I'm in. Like, cool. If you want to go out to London, beat the tar out of the Raiders right after you nearly beat the Rams and nearly win four straight, like, yeah, all right, I could buy into this, especially the way they're doing it and dominating it physically in an offensive line that no longer looks inept and instead actually looks like it might be one of the better ones in the league. I don't know. It just leads me to here. And maybe it's too early for this. I'll recognize maybe I'm a little cart ahead of the horse here.
Careful here, Mike.
But I just can't.
Mike,
I
careful. Look. The last time you did this to get extensions for service in DePoto.
Yeah, I know. Jeez. Whatever.
Will you just be
Whatever.
Careful?
I don't care. Forget it. Let's go.
I just can't believe there were people that were talking and speculating about the end of Pete Carroll in the offseason.
There weren't people. That was the national vibe, bro. That's not just like some people. That's everybody I ran into nationally. That's Colin Cowherd. That's a lot of folks who thought the end was near.
And when you told me that, I didn't believe you. Honestly, you kept telling me over, like, all off season, you're like, ah, oh, everyone out there saying this is going to be the end of Pete. I said, like, what are you kidding? Nobody's saying that. Yep. And everybody I talked to, and then we had Cowherd on, and he basically said it.
So this has always been my pushback on Pete Carroll. Kumbaya, high energy, players talk, get into politics, and what are you left with? The worst offensive line in football, your star players smacking you around, Richard Sherman now is ripping the team. You know, to me it feels like Seattle right now is a mess. Pete's got 1 year left in his deal. I don't think it ends well.
Will you text your guy Cowherd right now and ask him if it still feels like Seattle's a mess? Just do me a favor. Text your boy Cowherd right now.
Well, you know I'm not great at multitasking.
And just to ask him whether or not he still thinks it feels like Seattle's a mess. Okay. I didn't understand really the argument in the offseason, and I don't understand it now. What's the point that Cowherd and others were trying to make? That Pete was slipping because he had missed the playoffs for 1 year after having a historically bad kicker? Well, that's the definition of Graz's theory on just getting tired of winning.
Yeah, I think
go take a look at the New York Giants and what they've done since they got tired of winning with Tom Coughlin. And by the way, I probably would have supported moving on from Tom Coughlin, but it shows you how hard it is to find the next guy because they're on guy number two, and they look terrible. They look worse this year than last year.
Yes.
They're a complete mess. They got tired of winning. And the idea of moving on from Pete because what? You missed the playoffs one time seems completely, completely out of control.
Okay, well, they would say, and it's not just Colin, it's a lot of folks, you know, again, I wasn't making any of this up, and I'm glad that you know, Colin at least put it on the record there. They would say, Mike, it wasn't about 1 year, it was about a trend line of 3 years.
Yeah, but during that trend line of 3 years, they made the playoffs too and missed it the third time by a game.
They did.
So like
they would say, Michael, look at the way it ended with the Jets. Michael, look at the way it ended with the Patriots. Michael, look at the way it ended at USC. Michael, look at the way that, you know, it's a fun, emotional run. You can build it up, but it's just not sustainable.
Well, I would appreciate that they called me Michael. I think that's nice. I appreciate the use of my full name. Perhaps they should go with Michael Jeffrey to truly, like, make me feel belittled in this whole thing.
Listen, MJ, this is how it ended in a bunch of these other spots.
If the argument then was that he had lost control of his players, it sure seems like he's taken it back. If that was the big argument in the offseason was, oh, he's lost control of his players. Well, guess what? He jettisoned the guys that were out of control, and he brought in new guys, and he sure seems to be back in control again.
Yes.
If the argument was that his physical balance style was no longer effective in the NFL, well, guess what? It always has been and always will be, and right now they're running the ball more than they're throwing it. So don't tell me that that style just doesn't play in the NFL. I watched it dominate the Raiders this past week. I watched it nearly upset the Rams. Were it not for a stupid decision at the end of the game, they maybe win that game. What's the argument? That he stuck with his core too long, Brock, and that he didn't have any new talent? Well, he may have. He may have stuck with his core too long.
Yeah, I think the argument also...
But that's not a fireable offense unless the second part of it is true, Brock.
What your eyes saw in December. That was part of the argument, too. Mike, it was what your eyes saw, MJ. It's what your eyes saw as Jacksonville was running down their throat. It's what your eyes saw when the Rams just humiliated them.
I completely understand that those things were bad.
It was an off-season of so much departure.
Brock, this goes back to the point I make a million times on this show. Not everything is a fireable offense. Some things are just mistakes. Some things are just offenses. What we saw in December was offensive. It was bad football. It was not becoming of the Seahawks organization or of Pete Carroll. And I think he would admit that and tell you the same thing. That's not what he wanted to be. So guess what he did in the offseason? He went about making changes. Yep. And the idea that you were going to fire him but before allowing the changes to take shape was insane. It was always insane. You do that with Ben McAdoo, who has no track record. Ben, you don't get the benefit of the doubt. When what you do fails in December, you might very well get canned. But when you've won a Super Bowl and been to another and made the playoffs nearly every year of your career, not to mention what you did in USC, you absolutely get a little bit more of the benefit of the doubt.
Yes.
And you get the opportunity to fail for a month and then come back and figure out whether or not you can make the changes necessary to get it moving in the right direction again. And getting rid of Richard Sherman and Michael Bennett and all the other guys they moved on from this offseason and coming back strong with a new group and allowing them to grow, that is something Pete Carroll deserved from the get-go. And anybody who was saying otherwise was just hot-taking or jumping the gun or just looking to make a news story. Oh, look, I'm ready for the next news cycle. I'm ready to move on from Pete Carroll because the next news cycle. Mm-hmm. It was stupid then, and it looks even stupider now.
Yes, I think all of that is very, very fair. I think you come back at all of those points and debates, and had he not made any change, Mike, and it had been Tom Cable yet again, and it had been Tom Cable's picks up front, and it had been the same run system. I'm probably right there with Colin Cowherd and the rest of those guys. But this organization empowered him and empowered John Schneider to make the change they had to make. They had to make the changes offensively. They had to make the changes with personnel. They had to get back to Pete establishing his program. And I think the thought out there, again, in just speaking for a lot of what I heard, is does he have the juice to do this at 67? Like, does he? I know he did it.
I'm sorry.
Building up USC.
I have to cut you off. Yeah. The idea that Pete Carroll is a normal 67 doesn't fly with me.
Like, Hold on a second.
No.
Do you realize in about 10-hour span, I had Coach Carroll for a half hour, and then I had Herman Edwards from 6 to 7 p.m.?
Those guys defy age.
Can you even imagine?
But it's more than that with Pete. I mean, Herm does it with energy. I was looking at Pete yesterday, and I shouldn't admit this. I was talking about this with Maury yesterday and Stacey. I was looking at Pete while we were interviewing him, and it wasn't the right day for it, obviously. We were talking about Paul Allen's really heavy stuff. I was just looking at his hair for a few. Like,
he just looked good, didn't he?
His hair. Like, how often do you think Pete gets his hair cut?
Pete was looking fly.
Right,
it's a plant based turn, you guys.
Well,
like, what do we have to talk about this? Plant based turn.
Was he wearing that double unbuttoned shirt?
He was wearing the Henley, like a gray Henley, a top two buttons unbuttoned.
We were watching that in the sports pit. His presser. I said, "Give me a piece of Pete,
dude!" From a yard away. I mean, I was sitting nearly across the table from him. It was. I couldn't stop looking at his hair.
It's all the quinoa he's been eating.
His hair looked like perfectly in place. There's no way that man is 67 years old. There's none.
Smoke show, huh? Smoke show.
I'm just saying. This idea that...
Smoke show for sure.
There's no way that this Pete Carroll, 67, doesn't have the energy, can't get this team turned around in the right direction, doesn't like he forgot what he was doing.
He's not calling Dr. Eric Hockey.
No.
Carroll is...
Why is my studio getting so hot down here?
Text message. Did Salk just do a buff hair report? Maybe. I'm just saying, if you were in the room, I was staring at his hair to the point where I started to feel a little awkward, like he might be noticing that I wasn't making eye contact. Like, hey, eyes down here.
It was a little
eyes
weird.
Down here, Saul.
I was feeling that presence from you. I was looking over at the time. You're just mouth agape. You're just staring at him. I'm like, you got something, bro?
Salk, eyes down here. 7:10, time for Need to Know.
Need to Know, the voice of Seattle sports.
Brought to you by VenueKings.com.
Here's what you need to know up first.
I'm so embarrassed right now. I was not going to admit that. That was not part of the plan for today. Sorry. All right, here's what we did here while sitting down with Pete Carroll yesterday, at least while I was able to concentrate. The London trip was the best of his life. KJ Wright, Rasheem Green, Ed Dixon should all return after the bye week. J.D. McKissic is getting closer to a return, and he would not have come to the Seahawks or the NFL were it not for Paul Allen. Yeah, there was a whole lot in yesterday's Pete Carroll show. We'll be playing you sound from it throughout the day today. Let's focus here for a moment, though, just on the London trip, because the more you hear him talk about it, the cooler it sounds. We're going to hear more from Lydia Cruz today on what she experienced in London. But, Brock, it just sounded like a really amazing experience, not only from a football, NFL, America perspective, but just from a Seahawks branding perspective and all the stories of how great the fans were and how they took over in a really great way. It's pretty inspiring to hear.
Yeah, it kind of tied together to a degree, didn't it, as we got a chance to talk about the loss of Paul Allen, kind of all grieved together over the last couple days of just the meaning that he's been in our community and everything that he has done for the organization. And it just tied together, as Pete talked about, coming to Seattle because of Paul. And that Paul just always and constantly empowered him to go after it, man. Go after it. Don't ever sit on the sidelines. You go after it. And isn't that what the Seahawks fans did in London? Isn't that what Russell felt when he said to Pete, man, this feels like the Super Bowl. When Pete says to you and I yesterday, it felt bigger than Rose Bowls and Orange Bowls. Yeah, it was a lot of just that energy that starts with Paul Allen and the driving force behind so much of it. And certainly Pete Carroll right there alongside.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Yeah, a couple games in baseball last night as the postseason continues on. Red Sox beat the Astros 8-2 to now have a 2-1 series lead in the ALCS as they continue to play in Houston Game 4. Dodgers beat the Brewers in 13 to even the series at 2-2 there, but that's not really the story coming out of that game. Manny Machado with a really dirty play as he was running to first base. Kind of tried to take the legs out from the first baseman. It just didn't look right and not becoming of one of the young superstars in this game. So benches cleared. There were no punches thrown or anything. But yeah, things heating up a little bit with the Dodgers and Brewers in the NLCS.
Yeah, and I think in some ways these games continue to be a microcosm of the entire baseball season. There is so much dominant pitching. There's so much massive use of pitchers and bullpens that have been dominant. And really, it was just Boston getting after Osuna yesterday. 5 runs he gave up, couldn't happen to a better guy, as the Red Sox take a 2-1 lead. And I think history has shown us, at least in recent memory, you win Game 3 of a series tied at 1-1, you win that series 69% of the time. And I think Major League Baseball would sign up for the Dodgers and Red Sox.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Yeah, college ranks. Washington Wednesday, of course, is today. Huskies continuing to lose depth along the defensive line. They're going to turn to 2 freshman D tackles to try to make an impact against Colorado on Saturday. In the meantime, the entire state of Washington seems to be descending upon Washington State. Everybody is heading to Pullman. Everybody is heading to the Palouse. College game day is there, and that is attracting quite a crowd. Estimates from 75,000 to 100,000 people expected to all invade Pullman this weekend. I'm hoping that Danny Dave Moore is going to be there on Friday afternoon.
Yeah, it's going to be a phenomenal show over there. And as for Washington, I guess there is some advantage here, or at least some opportunity, and Chris Peterson alluded to it and spoke to it as to why those freshmen are available, Mike. Within the old redshirt rules, I don't know if they'd have done this and made this play. But because you get an opportunity to play upwards of 4 games in a season and can still salvage that redshirt year in a time of real need, as Jalen Johnson is going to be suspended for the first half of this game, as Shane Bowman continues to be out, that defensive line has been so depleted physically. Yeah, you get an opportunity to get 2 big monster freshmen in there, get their feet wet, and then still save themselves a year. That's an opportunity, and I think possibly a bonus for Chris Peterson and his staff. And I just can't wait. I can't wait for the Cougs that have just never, right, they never had this. They never had this attention. They've never been in the front of the line. They've never had game day. Although Old Crimson has flown for 15 years all over America, and it will be on full display Saturday.
All right, there you go. 3 things you need to know. Did you hear Jim Mora? Even Jim sounded a little nervous. nervous. Like, yeah, I hope that we live up to the pressure and the spotlight. But, yeah, I'm a little worried that it might not happen. So, yeah, we'll see. It's going to be a lot of fun. Friday, they'll be there in Pullman. And then, of course, game day Saturday morning. You can listen to the show here on the 710 Sports app. It is driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealers. Where's the professor?
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Song.
If you want to take care of him, take care of him now. The price is only going to go up.
Every morning at 7:15.
He's too important to let go. You're not trying to totally break everything down.
Plus, a wild card.
What magic trick would you like to be able to perform?
Yeah, I can maybe try to have you disappear. That could be nice.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Song.
Good morning, John.
Good morning.
How good are the Seahawks?
Pretty good. I think, again, that this is the team that I thought it was going to be. It didn't look that way in the first two games, but now I think you can see the formula, and it's starting to work. I mean, first off, the formula on offense, and really it's kind of interesting because here they were, an offensive line that struggled for 2 years, got bad grades and all that stuff, and it turned out to be that the two additions in the offseason, DJ Fluker and then the late pickup of J.R. Sweezy, really got the run game going to a point where it's got 157 yards over the last three games or four games. That's good. All right, that's a positive thing, and now they have an identity and three really good running backs and another talented running back who's always hurting, CJ Procise. Now on defense, I think you can see that the secondary is starting to become really good because it now has established a persona where if you go across the middle, you may get hit. I mean, four guys that have now been wiped out, wide receivers with concussions in the last 2 weeks, all on legal hits. You can look at the fact that the young cornerbacks are looking sensational to a point where, you know, if they can get something done with Justin Coleman, this group can be together 3, 4, 5 years because you have a rookie who looks good tackling and covering in Trey Flowers, a good cover guy in Shaquille Griffin who's also good on the run, and then you can see the combination of Bradley McDougal and Tedrick Thompson not only can cover, but they can hit. That's good. The pass rush we'll still have to hold judgments on. We know how good Frank Clark is, but I think that everybody else was able to get through because they had 2 6-8 rookies out there at tackle. They were just getting beaten like a drum, but I think that that's the thing they still have to work on, the pass rush, even though I say that after a game where they got the pass rush going great.
And on the horizon, maybe a couple starters even coming back that haven't played and contributed all year. And K.J. Wright and Ed Dixon, J.D. McKissick, as Pete referenced, is also looking to come back. I'm curious, John, in all of your years of those medical reports and all your databases, is there ever something to be said? Is it ever as simple as that team that hits and is the hitter versus the one that's the hit-y tends to be the healthiest? Because the last couple weeks, the Seahawks have not had a single injury coming out of a couple of their ball games.
Yeah, I think that's the case. I mean, and it's also the ones, because I remember talking to Mike Mularkey a couple two years ago, and they had the latest bye week ever. It was in December, first week of December, and I'm looking at your injury list, and you have nobody. Absolutely nobody that's hurt, and that's because they practice hard and hit hard. And so I think the teams that practice hard and hit hard, along with the ones that hit hard in the game, they tend to escape the injuries. And that seems to be, I think, because again, you don't see that much. But I think this is the case.
You know, John, I started off the show today a little irritated at what happened in the offseason where Brock kept telling me about all these national folks he was talking to who wondered if this was going to be the end of Pete Carroll and his regime here in Seattle. I thought it was ridiculous then. It seems even more ridiculous now. But how loud was that noise this offseason?
It was pretty loud, and I know that, I think a little bit internally you can see that there was a little pressure exerted by Paul Allen. Because Paul, toward the end of the season, was not seeing things that he liked, particularly after the Ram game. And I think he came in and, put a little bug in Pete's ear saying, something's got to change here. I cannot see good things. And so Pete changed the coaching staff. They were more, instead of worrying about picking up the compensatory picks, like they could have had 3 fourth-round compensatory picks, they worried about getting acquisitions. And so, they kind of changed a little bit in response to Paul, in response to that. And I think you can see it's rejuvenated everything because, everybody was talking about, a reset, which is what it is, and it's not a complete rebuild. But this reset, now you can see, had a plan, and that plan starting to work.
Anything you learned yesterday as Pete talked about being hired here and the impact and the role that Paul Allen played in that? Was there any new news yesterday that you deciphered?
not new news. I think it's just more kind of, you know, filling in the gaps of all the different things that we were trying to figure out about Paul. Because one thing, you know, Paul didn't really spend much time or if any time with the media. But I think what you can see is that, you know, how Paul would stay out of things. But I think the biggest thing that Pete said was that Paul was a problem solver. And that was the big thing that he stressed to Pete. And so if he saw a little bit of a problem, he would mention it and then they would get through it and they were able to work it through. And that's why I think this has worked so well. I mean, you have one of the best owners you could ever have because he let the football people make the football decisions. And if he start to wonder about the decisions, okay, well, then they got it fixed. Well, they got it fixed. I think that was the biggest thing because we always knew that Paul would spend more time, you know, with the Trailblazers because that was his love. His love was for basketball. His love for the Seahawks was just this community to make sure that it was good. But Paul was always able to come back and make sure that this thing was going to be right. And whether it's hiring Mike Holmgren, hiring Pete Carroll, getting players that they would need and giving all the resources. I mean, that's the biggest thing I think we learned yesterday.
And you have any concerns about what that will look like? Not short-term moving forward, but long-term?
I mean, I think you have to have a little bit of trepidation, but I think that it's in good shape because I think, one, you can look at the area that they're in. I mean, certainly there's enough resources to carry it through for many years, and you would imagine that his sister is going to be handling that. But if she wants to move away, you know, I think there's enough people in town that can put something together to be able to make this work.
Really? Even at close to, I mean, what do you think they're worth? Close to $3 billion?
About $2.5 billion. I think what 2.6 is what Forbes has.
Yeah, that's what I saw. But I mean, I would think that in a bidding situation, it might even go up from there. I mean, if you're talking 2.75, close to $3 billion. It's not like a lot of people walking around with that kind of cash.
No, but there's people in this town. I mean, I have to throw the name Jeff Bezos out there.
Really?
I mean, you know, why not? I mean,
just because he seems like he's had no interest whatsoever in either the community or in owning a sports team.
Well, I mean, he put $50 million a game on Thursday Night Football in Amazon. I mean, when the streaming rights to that. So there is involvement there.
Yeah.
And, you know, he does have the Washington Post, which, of course, I'm a little familiar with now that I do the Monday column. So, you know, I think he could be one. But again, he might do it for the community. I think that you've got all the people that have involved in the basketball operation trying to get a basketball team, you know, there. I think they could be involved in that. I mean, again, it may not be one person. Mm. But also, the bidding part, I don't think bidding is going to be part of this because it's not a money thing. Remember, this is a Paul Allen team, and this was bought for the idea of the community. So I don't think they're worried about the bidding part of it. I think just the legacy of it.
Wild card time.
Time now for the wild card. Wild card.
Mr. Professor Clayton,
yes, Lydia.
I spent a lot of time asking people, because I was really interested in soccer while I was over there, asking them who their teams were, learning about the different levels of the English Premier League. If you were to start a team, what would they be called? Where would you want it to be located?
Oh, I guess that fastball coming right down the middle of the plate. And I'm ready to hit it right now. It would be called the Nils.
Ooh.
You know why?
Why?
Because I have no interest in soccer. It'd be nil. Zero. So I think that would be the Seattle Nils. And, of course, I wouldn't have a coach in the sideline because I would not, you know, want to be there. So it's like a...
Would you want to make it just like as uninteresting as possible? Like no colors? Colorless?
Again, it's like for the area, I'd have to make sure I try to find as good of a team as I possibly can. Because, I mean, Seattle loves soccer probably more than any other city in the country. And I think that's so appreciative of that. But for my interest, I'd have to call it the Nils.
Yes, I appreciate that about you, John. That's where you and I are on the same page.
Hey, JC, what was the best thing you ate over in London?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, because again, I had two sandwiches dinners. I had a Reuben sandwich one night on Friday, and I had a ham sandwich on Saturday. But the interesting part is the way that they serve things. And so if you have a beverage, you know, whether it's a Coke or whatever it is, and they keep on bringing you little snacks. It was amazing. So I think the snacks were the best part because you got some nuts and you got some potato chips, and that was, I think, the best part.
That sounds amazing. They don't. What do they call potato chips there? Because they aren't chips fries. So what do they call the chips?
I know they were chips. I don't know what they call them.
John, thank you. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you tomorrow. John Clayton with us every morning at 7:50. Lydia, what do they call potato chips there? Don't they have a different name for potato chips? Because chips are already taken. They're fries.
I actually didn't have any potato chips, so I had no...
Somebody will.
I had plenty of chips.
All right, 710-710, powered by Coors Light. Somebody will, I'm sure, let us know.
Jeez. I just want to know more about John in London.
Do you?
I'd like to do a whole podcast of his entire trip.
I don't know that you actually want that. We're going to play our favorite
They're
game next,
known
Brock.
As crisps.
Coming up. Oh, there you go. Crisps. Thank you. It's Brock and Salk. We'll be right back.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
this is Brock and Salk.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com.
I think we might have shut down our text machine here, Brock.
Oh, no, what happened?
We have more text messages saying that they're crisps. The potato chips are called crisps in London than I think anything that's ever come into this text machine before. Like, more than when we ask people about tickets or anything like that.
Oh, really?
It's insane. It's just everybody in the world chipping in.
You
kind of
hooked everybody, Salk, when you started talking about Pete, his hair.
Think so?
Your love affair for him and everything else.
I couldn't take my eyes off his hair yesterday. I don't know what it was. He looks so youthful.
What product he uses?
Huh? I want to know how often he gets his hair cut. It's always just like sort of perfectly in place. All right. Which is better, Brock? It's our favorite game, and we're going to play it right now. Are you ready?
Crisps or chips?
Good question. I just love I think I like potato chips more than I like fries. How about that?
I don't.
I love potato chips. One of my favorite
things
in the world.
And let's be clear, like the best potato chip versus the best fry.
Oh. Yeah, fry wins. Quality, it's hot.
Then it's fries.
Okay. It can be dipped in a ranch or tartar sauce.
But consistency, probably potato chips. Yeah. Don't you think?
And the best potato chip?
Like the worst potato chip is much better than the worst fry.
Mm.
Correct.
Bad fries are terrible.
They're soggy and soft.
They can be kind of chalky. Yeah, those are terrible. You don't want that. All right, Brock, which is better? Baseball Joe Buck or football Joe Buck?
Ooh.
I know there's some people who are saying which is worse, but I'll say which is better because I like Joe Buck.
I'm going to say baseball Joe Buck.
You think he's in his happy place?
That's where it all started. That's where he learned it, sitting at the foot of his father, Jack, and his amazing calls for decades and decades and decades, and just a St. Louis guy. I'm going to say baseball.
I think I can agree with you. And what's funny is a few years ago, there were a few other guys who could make a baseball game seem big. Right. Dan Shulman's got the pipes for it. And as much as I didn't like John Miller, I mean, John Miller was the voice of Sunday Night Baseball in big games forever. I mean, I had Vin Scully before that and even Bob Costas, all these guys who could make games seem big. Other than Joe Buck right now. And that's not a shot at Matt Viskersian, who I think does a good job. But no one else makes a baseball game seem big right now other than Joe Buck. Hmm. And there's plenty of guys who make a football game seem big.
Yeah.
So I think for that reason, I got to go with baseball.
Yeah,
he's sort of like... He's like kind of by himself on an island there.
Smoltz is old school, too.
People are killing John Smoltz,
man.
He
didn't like those shifts.
I just thought he sounded ridiculous yesterday. Did you hear that? He's like going, well, eventually one of these shifts is going to lose the game for somebody. Like, well, maybe. But also maybe it takes away 10 hits that allows them to win the game. Like, come on, man. They're not doing this for no reason. There's a lot of percentages in their favor.
Yep.
That's like saying, well, you know, you keep hitting 16 against the 10 in blackjack. Eventually, you're going to draw a 10. Like, well, yeah, eventually, but that doesn't make it the wrong move statistically. I just thought that was stupid.
Gotcha.
I did.
Thanks.
Brock, which is better? Howdy in Arizona or Kyle in Arizona?
Yeah, Brock.
I must say Howdy in Arizona. Because as I remembered yesterday, and I shared with Howdy as I was driving by, I got pulled over with Kyle
so
in the car.
Yeah,
and they
did.
Thought I was Kyle's dad. That would never happen with Howdy.
No, but I could get pulled over with Howdy, and they might think he's my brother.
True.
But this question is flawed because you're asking which is better, 1 week of Kyle in Arizona or 1 day of Howdy
True.
In Arizona?
Right.
I think I'll still
because if it's a week.
Yes. If it's a week, it's Kyle. If it's a day, it's Howdy.
I'm just
I can't imagine feeding Howdy for a week.
You'd go broke.
Yes.
You don't have the kind of money it takes to feed Howdy for a full week.
No.
By the way, feeding Kyle for a week in Arizona is
no
costs
issue.
Nothing.
You save money.
You get him just a box of scones at Safeway, and he pecks on them all week.
Dude, when he and Ashley and I went out for pizza, he couldn't finish his.
But does
Ashley
that make you
done.
Feel bad about your own food consumption?
Never.
No.
When I go to Arizona, I make myself feel bad about it on my own.
But it's always quite entertaining to me.
Did you bring Howdy to Culver's?
Salk's always talking about his 30-10, but then criticizing how little I eat. I'm like, oh, this is weird.
No, Howdy found a great taco shop.
Oh,
and it was the biggest burrito either of us have ever had. It was phenomenal. Mm.
All right, which is better? Strip sack touchdown or a pick six?
Strip sacks a touchdown because it might be scored by a fat guy.
Right, but so could a pick six in theory.
Yeah, maybe, but far less likely.
Yeah.
Lots more moving parts with the strip sack fumble in return. You got to have, obviously, a dominant effort like Frank
Clark.
You mean
like jiggling parts?
Yeah, just you're going
like
to see him.
Stomach bouncing?
You're going to see him just destroy somebody or get by somebody. And then usually it's there's a hit and then somebody else has got to follow through. I like the moving team element parts of a strip sack fumble for return for a touchdown. Sign me up for that.
I think one of the things that you often get, though, with a pick six, I guess it depends. If it's like a straight pick six to the house.
Like Justin Coleman in Dallas
right.
last year.
But what about the other pick sixes of like you got to weave your way through and there's a whole bunch of moves made?
Those are kind of fun.
Yeah. I don't know. There's something awkward about like the strip sack. The strip sack's great. It's the picking up of the ball for the touchdown.
Why have the Seahawks taken the ball away 13 times already this year?
I don't know.
On a pace only behind the 2013
bigger
Super
question
Bowl
is why
teams.
Couldn't they do that for the last 5
yes.
years?
That's crazy.
Yeah. People want to know why we got pulled over. I got pulled over for speeding.
I got pulled over. What do you call
you
that?
Crossed
thing,
the gore point.
Yes.
The gore point.
Yeah, you passed the gore point. Yeah. That happens.
I missed the exit, so I crossed over the gore point. The guy thought I was Kyle's
lit
dad.
Lit you up right in the Home Depot parking lot.
Which is better?
Bell Road.
Going to see the Seahawks in London or going to see minor league baseball games in the lower Midwest?
Ooh, interesting. That's deep. Huh.
Does anyone know?
I don't know. Is there anyone
who
in the building who could help us with this one? Which would be better?
Who would be weird enough?
Traveling to London to go see the Seahawks,
right.
Or going to the Ozarks to see random single-A Missouri baseball
teams. The dead of August heat.
Lydia?
That was a tough one.
Which was better?
I gotta say, it's Seahawks in London. Because I'll just never have that experience again. Ever, ever. There'll just never be anything like it.
Was it as wild as Pete alluded to yesterday as far as just the fanfare and the Seahawk Nation traveling?
I thought it was pretty darn wild. I didn't see any Raiders gear until the actual weekend of. I saw Seahawks gear when I was in Scotland. I saw it just about everywhere you could
crazy.
Possibly see it. And then just to see the general love for the NFL was kind of crazy that all 32 teams were represented there. And families, it would make no sense. It would be one person wearing a Miami Dolphins jersey, the husband wearing a Brady jersey, the kid wearing, I don't know, just a Seahawks jersey. It made no sense.
They don't know
I
any
it.
Of the rivalries or
they
anything
just picked
like
their
that?
Teams based on, I asked a couple of people about it. I was like, oh, well, I just caught a game this one time and now they're my team.
I get that. Who liked London more, you or Pete Carroll?
Where did the fans come from? We had fans everywhere. It was like they supplanted the 12s. You know, we had people everywhere we went, anywhere in town that you drove in the buses or wherever we went. There was people everywhere. And then we got to the stadium, and the stadium was crazy. It was a home game. It was not kind of a home game. It was a home game. When the first group comes out on the field, the kickers come out, they're cheering for Seabass and Mike Dixon coming out on the field right there entirely. You know, what's going on with this, you know? And it just carried on throughout, and then the game followed through, and then the trip coming home, and then every single aspect. This was one of my most favorite experiences I've ever had with the team and traveling. I mean, I'm talking about Rose Bowls and Orange Bowls and everything you can think of, the best of the best. This was just as top tier as you can get. And the players played like it and acted like it throughout the whole thing. So it was an amazing trip.
Which is better, Salk?
Yeah.
Salty Pete or Giddy Pete?
Oh.
Do you think Pete Carroll loved that trip?
He's freaking jacked,
oh,
man.
Oh, my goodness.
Salty Pete? You know, when
I like Salty Pete.
I kind of did, too. Yeah. Was it the first game of the year? Is a little salty?
Yeah, I got no problems with Salty Pete.
Salty Pete or Giddy Pete?
Yeah.
What about salt and pepper coiffed hair Pete?
Oh, dude.
See, I had a better time with Pete based on the fact that he could only eat vegetables while he was there because he's on the plant-based term.
Do they even have vegetables there?
A lot of potatoes.
Some cabbage, I think. They do cabbage. But no, I great fish and chips, so Pete missed out on that. He's having a way better hair time than I am.
I'm sure the hair is tough there. It's all the
it is.
The
there's a lot of like
moisture
in the air.
Sure,
just
a lot
didn't
of curly.
Well for me.
I'll tell you, when I went to London, I went there like when I was 12 years old. The only thing I ate there for a full week was chicken Kiev. You ever had chicken Kiev?
Yes.
You cut into it, and the butter like explodes everywhere. It's like chicken wrapped around a stick of butter and then baked or fried.
But why?
Because I was 12.
Why?
And by the way, London in 1990, there was no food. It was not like a... London was a little behind
that's
the times.
Like anarchy in Britain.
Yes.
It's punk.
That was very punk. All right, that's it. That's all we got time for today. I'm sorry about that.
Can I ask you a question? Would you guys have been brave enough? I know Kyle is out already, but to try haggis?
Sure. Yeah.
Nope.
Probably would have tried it. What that's is the it? Stuff from So I Married an Axe Murderer, right?
I got some teasing because I was not brave enough to try it.
What is it? It's tongue?
I think it's sheep's stomach.
Sheep's stomach.
And then oatmeal is packed into the sheep's stomach with other stuff.
A savory pudding containing sheep's pluck,
right?
Minced with onion, oatmeal, spices, salt.
Gotta give it a go.
Probably give it a shot. We tried that.
In an animal's stomach.
Yeah, sure. We had that thing in, remember the breakfast
blood
thing? Blood pudding. It was terrible.
Oh, it was not good.
No, there was awful. There
blood
was
sausage?
Yeah, blood sausage.
In Ireland?
It was really
bad. Ingredients in order. Sheep's heart, liver, lungs, and stomach.
That sounds pretty good.
Also, onions, oatmeal, and spices.
I love lung. Any opportunity to eat lung, I'm generally...
I do love, liver, and I wouldn't put it past.
Brock, how good has the Seahawks offensive line been the last 4 weeks? I got to have an answer from you. Coors Light's Blue 42. It's coming up next. I'm Brock and Salk.
This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
All right, time for three good football questions for Brock, and then we'll get you guys on the horn at 8 o'clock. Got some Seahawks conversation for you, but let's start here, Brock. Question number one. The Seahawks offensive line was not good for 2 weeks and really 3 or 4 years before that, and now it's been good for 4 weeks.
Yeah.
Why?
The addition of an offensive line coach that is diversified in his concepts, I think both in run game and just, I think, much more solidified and traditional in his pass protections. In fact, I'll add a little meat to that from Pro Football Focus and the Seahawks site in particular. From weeks 3 to 6, the Seattle Seahawks offensive line ranks first overall in pass blocking efficiency, allowing just 13 pressures on 106 pass blocking snaps in that time span. Over the last 4 weeks and in those games, of which you won 3 of 4, you were the number one most efficient pass blocking team. Yes, it's Mike Solari. There's no question it's J.R. Sweezy and DJ Fluker. But Mike, when you run the football, and it's why you run to win, you throw to score, you run to win. Because when you can run the football, you actually dictate. And Aaron Donald and Ndamukong Suh and Michael Brockers and the rest of them can't just put their hand in the ground and pin their ears back and get after you. There's some sound of Von Miller that kind of went viral yesterday, and he talked about kicking the tar out of the Arizona Cardinals, he and Bradley Chubb, and you remember that very first game of the year in Denver, and he did just that against the Seahawks. Why? Because they didn't run at him. Why? Because he knew what was coming. Yeah, that run, you know, sets you up to throw to score, but it also, man, it just takes away the stinger of pass rush so often, and that's why the Seahawks, in many ways, have been the number one pass blocking group the last 4 weeks.
All right, question number two. Part of the conversation about the changes in the Seahawks is about their changes in leadership, and we asked Pete about it yesterday. With the void left from some of the leaders who departed this offseason, who stepped up into them? Here's part of that answer.
Jaron Reed is really a guy. He's a real deal. They love him. And they, you know, he was like that at Alabama, and we heard that a lot when we were in the process of drafting him. And he is the real deal. He's just one of those heart, soul dudes, just like Fluke is on the other side, you know, and Russell is always at the heartbeat of what's going on because he's in the center of everything. He's got a good voice. He represents so well.
He also mentioned Doug Baldwin. He mentioned Bradley McDougal. Brock, who didn't he mention?
He did mention Frank Clark, and this is not a rip job on Frank Clark, but it adds just a little further evidence, Mike, for you and I that are on the same page as this, opposite of John Clayton and a lot of football people, and that is I just don't know if I can trust to pay Frank Clark $18 million a year, which is the going rate for elite pass rushers in this league. The challenge is you have to have it. We've already said it. The number one area of just need for this team moving forward this season and beyond is you've got to have difference-making pass rushers, and Frank Clark is absolutely that. But is Frank Clark someone to me that's reliable and dependable and a leader and someone that when you invest that kind of significant dough and that percentage of your salary cap, you would sure love to have? I don't think he is. I think Jaron Reed is much more of that alpha in that defensive line group. And Pete's right, man. He's a blast, and he's sure fun to talk to and cover.
I really like Jaron Reed. Did you happen to, I don't know if you saw him after the game on King 5, just talking about how he was like, oh, man, we got a shutout. Also, he's like, well, they kicked a field goal. Oh, man, I know. And he's like all upset. I love that guy. I loved him when we interviewed him this year. He's the guy I'd like to see them sign. I know you mentioned Justin Coleman. I gotta put Jaron Reed right there with him. Question number three. So two freshman D linemen are going to see some time on Saturday for the Huskies against Colorado. What can we realistically expect?
Yeah, I'm not
even
going to try to get their names. I don't have it phonetically in front of me, and I'm not going to butcher it. But they're two big Polynesian kids that are mighty physical. And if there is a position, Mike, that you can come, you know, week seven of a season into, or week eight here, it is defensive line as a young guy that that hasn't played this year, and just plug a hole. And that's what they've got to do. They've got significant holes. Jalen Johnson, because of the targeting call, is going to be suspended for the first half of the game. They have really missed Shane Bowman. Down at Oregon, you're forced to play walk-ons and undersized guys. And these are just two big four-star physical kids that you're just going to ask to come in and really hold the point. They're not going to be playmakers. They're not going to be Vita Vea and in the backfield, but they just simply can't get blown off the ball. And true freshman D linemen do play. Stanford plays one. Colorado has started one at that position this season all year long as a true freshman. So it's not unheard of, but more than anything, it is to stabilize the group. And with four games to play with and still have the opportunity to redshirt them, I think now is the time of both need and want.
All right, there you go. That is today's Coors Light's Blue 42. A bunch of people asked me yesterday who should be the guest picker on Saturday for game day. Kyle, do we have a name yet? Do we know who we want?
We don't know who it will be.
Should be Drew Bledsoe.
It's a short list.
That's what I said.
Should be Drew.
I said
Drew. I mean, Drew Bledsoe's like
Ryan Leaf's got a speaking engagement. Steve Gleason would have been incredible. I guess he turned down or just has other opportunities or other responsibilities. So to me, it's Drew Bledsoe.
Can we start a campaign?
For Drew?
Or Clay Thompson. The Warriors don't play Saturday. They're on the West Coast this week.
I like that.
I don't know if Clay's got the juice.
What?
Do you think he's got the juice to do that and the picks and know football inside and out and have fun and be like the coolest guy on earth?
Let me say this as Drew Bledsoe's biggest fan. I had a cat named Bledsoe. Clay Thompson is far more relevant than Drew Bledsoe.
When I was there for Michigan Notre Dame, they had like a country music singer.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. He didn't have any
relevance. I'm talking representing the Cougs. This is the Cougs. You're representing
the three-time NBA champ that just put on his ring last night.
I can't really. Is he really one you want to talk about football games and pick him?
Well, that's not really part of the guest pick.
I don't know. Give me Drew Bledsoe.
They had the Chainsmokers last week. They didn't know anything.
I don't really know what you guys are talking about. I don't really know. I've never seen the darn show, but I'm sure it's going
to
be great.
Brock's put me in a corner here to not love Drew Bledsoe at all times.
You just said Bledsoe is not relevant anymore. That's a shot.
You are.
Why would you take shots at Drew Bledsoe here? This is what happens. Yeah. Game day comes to Pullman, and it's tearing apart the Cougs. The Cougs are starting to turn on each other. All right, it's Brock and Salk.